Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper, and today we're going to be talking about bird hunting and training bird dogs. Got three or four gentlemen sitting in front of me here, and they're all into dogs big time. And I got to say right off the bat, guys, you've probably heard the statement from Ernest Hemingway, who said that last bird you shoot on the wing is just as much fun as the first one.
Absolutely.
Oh, we all know that people are into bird hunting and dogs, man. They're passionate about what they do. And you'll notice we got a chorus in the background that's giving us a few little bit of bird dog sounds there. But I've been out today at Fleming's Farm and Kennel. This is just north of Rolla, Missouri. And I got Cliff Fleming, the owner here, who's been here for what, Cliff, 5 years?
5 years, yep.
Yeah, and I used to drive by this place all the time, and didn't look quite like it does today. But what a job you've done here, and I could tell it's a passion for you. But I've also got with us Pitts Lassane. And Josh Hagar. Josh from over around Dixon, did you say?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Pitts, he's from Cuba. Running for mayor. He's a politician. I think he's the only politician we got in the group, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Well, we're not going to let him run the program, okay? we're all going to talk bird dog stuff. But I've just had, boy, you guys have brought back so many memories for me today, because years ago I used to judge the score of the National Bird Dog Challenge events. And I've had, a point or two in my lifetime. I had a Brittany one time, but I was really a lab man. But I had a pointing lab one time that was just incredible. Missed that dog so bad. Peggy was a wonderful dog. She was naturally smart, or she'd have been in trouble having me as a trainer, you know. She would point, she'd block, do all these things. First time she blocked a pheasant, how in the world does that happen? You know, just had to be natural. I would have never known how to train a dog to do that. But I've watched some wonderful things happen today, and it's been fun to watch all you guys share your passion, work together. I think you guys would work a guy on the ground if he'd hang around long enough. But, Cliff, I got to ask you, man, you're so passionate about this stuff, training other people's dogs. I'm sure working with a lot of problem dogs. And watching you today, it seemed like a challenge to you, because we had, how many dogs did we work today? Eight or so? I don't know. Several dogs.
Seven or eight dogs, yep.
And they're all different breeds. And, man, you just seemed to, do y'all call him the dog whisperer?
Might as well.
might as well. But how long have you been dealing with dogs like this, bird hunting dogs?
Oh, for bird hunting dogs, I mean, it probably started with, I grew up raising just mutts in our farm in Iowa when we pheasant hunted, but we really didn't have a, per se, perfect bird dog. Probably about 20 years ago, I got into my first pointers. I always hunted hounds. That was my passion before. That kind of faded away, I guess, but probably about 20 years I've been really working with bird dogs on a pretty regular basis.
Well, I love that, hearing you talk about the hounds, too, because I grew up in the swamps of southeast Missouri, and all we had was rabbit dogs and hounds. My dad was kind of particular about the hounds. It always had to be black and tan coon hounds, you know. Now, the best rabbit dog we ever had, boy, and the word mutt, I would have never called him a mutt. But he was quite a mixed breed, you know. He was half beagle, quarter collie, quarter something else, you know, and he was kind of a big fat beagle, tan and white. But I hunted everything with that dog. He followed me everywhere I went. My mom used to say, you know, if I couldn't see you, I'd holler for the dog in the direction he came running from. I knew that's where you were, you know. So that's kind of way it worked on the farm. But I hunted rabbits and squirrels, and I don't care if I went coon hunting, we'd take him along too. He wasn't much of a coon hunter, and he'd sit back, let the black and tans, you know, fight with the coons, and he'd kind of cheer for them, I think, you know. But if a coon would come his way, he's gone, you know. But good old family dog, we've all had them. Yep. But somewhere along the line, we get lucky enough to run into somebody that'll take us bird hunting. And I don't know that I can remember. Yeah, I can remember the bird dog ever hunting it. But I had a brother-in-law who had I think it was an English pointer. Is there an English pointer?
Yep.
Okay, the dog was kind of a lemon and white, beautiful dog. And I've got to tell this story. You guys will just have to indulge me, and I'll give you a chance to tell your stories in a minute. But this guy, this friend of my brother-in-law of mine, he was a pretty hefty fella, and he owned a auto parts store, tractor supply, you know, knew everybody in three counties. Well, he had that just so happened, Mississippi County in southeast Missouri, they have a pheasant season down there that lasts like 9 days, and I think you can kill one bird a day is what you're allowed, you know. They just never really took. But Mr. Ike Lovin from Steelville, Missouri, was the wildlife biologist back in the 60s or 70s that made the first planting of pheasants in southeast Missouri. We've been friends for decades. Well, this had been 30 years ago this took place. He had never been back to the boot hill to check on those pheasants. Had never been back, never hunted them. Well, my brother-in-law hunted them. So I invited Ike, and we go down, we all hook up, and just had a great, great day. I think there were two birds killed that day. My brother-in-law killed one, and Ike killed one. I was the oddball out. I didn't even get a shot, I don't think. But can you imagine what Ike felt like, you know? But Danny Smithson, we always had this competition going on. He's a left-handed shooter. He was fast and he was deadly. I could never come close to out shooting him, but I was a writer and a photographer. So I set him up with his dog and a beautiful big rooster pheasant, awesome photograph. Got it on the cover of a magazine, and it was kind of a regional magazine out of southeast Missouri called the River Hills Traveler. And everybody got it, just like the local newspaper. Well, the story I wrote about Danny, he was a hefty boy. I called him Chubbs Smithson. His name was Danny. He'd never been called Chubbs, but to this day, he is still called Chubbs. I said, mess with me, dude, the pyre of the pen, you know. He still outshoots me. But back to the dog situation here. Gosh, Cliff, watching your work today, but I have to ask the question. Do you have a favorite breed?
You know, my favorite, I have the Red Setters and German Shorthairs, and I always probably have those two breeds. I really enjoy them. I enjoy all the breeds. That's kind of why I do this. I'm a NAVDA judge. NAVDA stands for North American Versatile Hunting Dog Association. I enjoy it because all these breeds, not only are they doing the field work, but these breeds are also now do they got to do the water work. They got to retrieve from land and water. They got to track, which you usually don't see these pointing breeds have to do these things, which I enjoy. I enjoy the challenge. And you talk about a English pointer. I got a buddy who has English pointers, and I had an opportunity to train a pup for him, Violet, cute little English pointer pup, and a little challenge to train because she was a little bit slow to mature, but her thing was butterflies. We'd be
butterflies
running around the field out there, butterfly, butterfly, and then she'd hit that bird scent cone and she'd lock up. But just pups like that and different breeds and different personalities, I really enjoy. So I enjoy all the working with all the continental breeds, and that's my thing. I like different dogs, and being a NAVDA judge, I get to drive, you know, go around the country and judge different test and see a lot of different pups and different breeds, and it's what I really enjoy.
Well, that's got to be a satisfying adventure if you love dogs and you get to travel around the country and watch. Yep. I guess you people watch too, don't you?
I do.
Kind of goes hand in hand, yep, doesn't it? Yep. Absolutely. Well, Pitts, how did you get acquainted with Cliff? How'd that work out?
Well, I had an RV repair business, and we had a mutual friend, Stacy Yoakum, and Cliff had some problems with an RV, and I come out to work on his RV, and at the same time, he had a trailer for sale, and he wanted to build this building, and so as he wanted to build this building, I had a construction business and RV repair business, and so
Did he sell used cars too?
Yeah. I had a number of them at one time. Yeah. And so I came in and helped Cliff finish this out for his dogs' kennels.
Yeah, Pitt's helped me with electricity and a lot of projects around here that he's really helped me make this place look like it is.
I take it the two of you have never looked back then.
No.
Well, Josh, you're the young guy of the group, I'd say. How do you fit in all this picture?
So I got here about 2 years ago, and I had started with German Shorthairs back when I lived on the East Coast, and I had recently gotten married to somebody that is in the military, and we got stationed here, and I spent the first 8 months doing not much, and then I was lucky enough to find Cliff, and I've been here ever since, learning as much as I can, because this is the greatest learning opportunity I've ever had when it comes to dogs.
Oh, absolutely. But isn't it astounding how like-minded people tend to drift together?
Gravity.
I just laughed today. I'd never been over here and come in. Of course, Pitts and I, how long have we known each other? A couple months?
Yeah, yeah.
And already he's invited me to come over and look at a bird hunting operation. I thought, that's a little weird, you know, but not weird, you know, in that sense. Yeah. And then I come in and one guy comes in I've known for 50 years, Dale Edwards from St. James, and a little bit the conservation guy came in. What's his name again? He'll kill me.
Nick
Girondo, who I've known for decades. Yeah. And, gosh, it's almost like a homecoming. But that's the way it is among bird hunters. And I think, of course, three of us sitting here are got several decades under our belt, and we've watched things change over the years, you know, and some of it's a little bit heartbreaking to us. Because how many places can you go these days, guys, and hunt wild quail?
Yep, that's tough.
Really tough, isn't it? Yep. And I grew up in a time when, you know, you didn't think about them. There were lots of them in the Boot Hill. But the habitat loss began, and even in the hills here, I remember I came to St. James in the early 70s. There were a core of old gentlemen in St. James who were avid quail hunters. They hunted on horseback. I never heard of such a thing, you know. Had these big old horses and great big pointers, and the dogs would point, and they'd ride up right by them. Didn't even get off the horses. This is going to be a real rodeo, you know, once they pulled the trigger on that shotgun. But the horses were as steady as the dogs. Just an incredible thing to watch. Well, guys, I know you're passionate and love what you're doing, but we talk about bird hunting. There's a lot of different birds out there that we can hunt. So what's your favorite?
I moved out here 5 years ago from California, and probably my very favorite bird to hunt is chucker. I like hunting them in the high desert. They hold well for the dog and challenging. You're hiking in some pretty rough country, and you gotta get up there and hunt, and you know, it's as challenging for you as it is the dogs, because you generally climb in a lot of elevation and you're on some pretty rough territory, and It's I just enjoyed that. So that's probably my favorite hunt.
That's probably why he grew the long legs.
Yeah.
So he can get over.
Yeah. What about you, Pitts? What's your favorite bird?
I'd say dove. I was born in Tennessee, raised in South Carolina, and dove hunting was just everybody's passion. So I'd say dove hunting is probably my favorite.
Boy, it's hard for me to choose a favorite, but I could certainly identify with the dove hunting because we had jillions of them down in Boot Hill. We had a little 40-acre farm and had acre two patch of woods on the southeast corner. There'd be 50,000 doves roosting there over the winter. Yeah. I mean, you know, as a kid, I shot more of them off the highline wires with BB guns and slingshots than most people kill with a shotgun, you know. In fact, I got in trouble a few times over that, but we won't discuss that. Joshua, what about you? You're the young guy now.
I'd have to say mine is rough grouse.
That's what I started on back in New Hampshire,
and there's nothing funner than being out in the thick stuff and having a grouse scare you.
Oh, yeah, I could see that, and I've dreamed about hunting grouse all my life, and all killed a few out west of spruce grouse and stuff, you know, the easy ones, so to speak. But rough grouse, that's just fascinating, fascinating bird. The dog work. Closest thing I've done to that is probably woodcock hunting.
Woodcock's a close second to rough grouse for me.
Yeah, and I haven't killed a lot of them.
That's why I never knew moving to Missouri here. And just the last couple of years, I discovered we actually got a decent woodcock population. And that's been really fun for me to hunt.
Yeah.
For these young pups, especially.
Yeah, I just lost a dear friend a couple of years ago. He was probably the best woodcock hunter in the Ozarks. But he knew all of many, many counties. He knew where all the little drainages were, you know, and had he was a Brittany guy. I always had the Brittanys. And back to the little country church I go to now, he invited me to that church. I've gone to church all my life, but I was kind of looking for a new place. You do that once in a while, you know. And, and we this has been 20 years ago. We were both in a little restaurant, both of us in our bird hunting gear. You know, we'd been bird hunting. We kept eyeballing each other, but nobody said a word, you know. And finally, about 15 minutes later, he walked over and introduced himself, and we talked about the woodcock hunting. And before he got through, you go to church anywhere? Well, yeah, I do, you know. So I didn't go with him. 3 or 4 years later, we're in a barber shop together, and he introduces himself again, like he'd forgotten, you know, invited me to church again. And third time, this was over a period of 10 or 15 years, I finally went to church with him, a little country church, and I laughed. It's, I mean, they're country folks, farmers and ranchers and that sort of thing. That's the only time they take them cowboy hats off is when we pray. And some of them used to bring their little blue heelers or cattle dogs to church with them, man. Yeah. It's an old barn, literally, concrete floors and stuff. And they come in, them dogs, they just flop down by their owners, you know, well-trained dogs. One day, one of them is getting late in the service, and the little dog gets up and trots out and leaves and goes out and jumps up on the back of the truck waiting on his owner, you know. And we got a young minister. He's well of an outdoorsman, pretty hefty young guy. And I said, Tommy, man, you need to pay attention to these cattle dogs. He said, what are you talking about? I said, you see that one get up and leave today? And he said, yeah, I noticed that. And I said, well, when dogs start leaving, you need to quit.
That's enough.
Yeah, pretty good stuff. But boy, oh boy. But I love to hunt and camp. What about bird hunting camps? Have you ever been involved in any of that?
I've never done a camp.
Never done a camp?
I have in northern Maine. It's the most fun you'll ever have out in the middle of nowhere. You get 10 guys, put them all together, and get a bunch of dogs, and you're just out for a week straight. Oh,
you can forget everything within a week, can't you?
Yeah, and the food is amazing because you've got somebody to cook every night.
Yeah, buddy, I like that food stuff because we don't have time for that story, but I am known as a gravel bar gourmet, and everybody, and I'm not that great a cook. Everybody just likes free food, you know. You get an audience when you do that. And I had a guy ask me one time about certain recipes. What's your secret ingredient? And I said, well, don't spread this, but my secret ingredient to every recipe I have on a riverbank is a pinch of sand. You're out there, you're going to get grit in your food anyway, you know. So, hey, I just eliminate that right off the bat. Well, we've talked, you know, bird dog, bird hunting, bird training. Now we're talking about eating. What's the best eating wild bird out there? I'm going to get an argument started here. Don't everybody talk at once either.
Personally, rough grouse.
There you go. He's a rough grouse man for sure.
Yeah. I like the quail.
Probably. Yeah, they're hard to beat.
Yeah,
but I'll probably go with chucker.
I kind of lean your way.
Chucker's pretty good.
See, I've never been around chuckers till one of somebody's bird hunting operations here in the Ozarks. But they're, you know, they're
white meat. Yeah,
yeah, great.
And they have great, more meat on the bone.
Yeah, yeah, great eating bird. They're good size, you know, bigger than nice a quail, but not quite as big as a pheasant. Yep. They fly well. And I have discovered, you know, you miss one, you just kind of watch where he goes down. Yeah. You may have to walk a little ways, but he's still going to be there, and that dog's going to find him. Yep. And I hate to admit it, but I have shot at some of them 4 or 5 times.
We all have.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I laugh. Today, that's the greatest thing about getting together with a bunch of guys to bird hunt. I don't care what kind of bird you're hunting, man. The first guy to miss, oh, poor guy. Yeah. You know? Yeah. If you can't take the heat, you just well stay home.
That's right.
Well, guys, what a ton of fun we're having here. But we're going to take just a short break here today so we can hear from our sponsors. But don't go away. We're just getting started good. We've got a bunch more bird hunting information coming your way.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high abounding purple mountains' majesty browse the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Rolla, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the Northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm Bill Cooper. I hope you enjoyed that first segment. We sure had a good time, but yeah. I've never seen... These guys are all sitting here smiling, and that's the way it is when you're around a bunch of bird hunters. They've always got something to smile about, laugh about, and particularly when you're laughing at their buddies, you know. We were just talking about men missing that first shot. It's terrible. That's why I never shoot first. Kind of like buying lunch today. We had a great experience. We went to a local Mexican place. What was the name of that place?
Casadora,
right here in Rolla, Missouri. Great food, great service, and we was all... And I was trying to impress the guys. I was going to buy lunch for them, you know, because they've been so good to me today, and asked them to leave a tip. And I get up there to pay, and this gentleman in front of him, he had spoke to Pitts right before he went out, and I guess they knew each other. Well, he paid for everybody's lunch. I said, dude, you just burst my balloon. I was trying to impress these guys, and you ruined my whole program. But acquaintances and people, that's one thing I love about the Missouri Ozarks. A lot of great people here, a lot of great fun, and you know, I'm tired. I'm sitting here about to go to sleep. I was on the Merrimack River yesterday with a young fellow who's starting a guide business. About threw my arms off, caught a lot of big trout during the day and some nice smallmouth. And I tell this story, too. Man, I thought I'd caught the biggest smallmouth of my life. Just a light rod. I'm bending that thing double on a crankbait, and I saw this flash of gold. I mean, it's fish look like it's 7 inches tall and 2 feet long, and man, that's got to be a 6-pound smallmouth. And that thing rolled up there, when it was a red horse, a sucker. Had a hook in its mouth, you know, their bottom feeders. Yeah. How does that happen? I've had my bubble burst a couple of times in the last 2 days, but those things happen, man. Great, great, great fun. Well, Josh, we're going to pick on you just a little bit. I saw a dog today that I've never seen before. I thought you'd made a bad mistake at your kennel and brought out your coonhound. Tell us about that dog.
So she is a Brocco Italiano. She's about 14 months now. She's going to be my first Brocco that I've ever had. I could not be crazier about the breed. It's not for everybody, but so intelligent. She's very biddable, very trainable, just a
sweet
great
dog.
Great love of a dog. Yeah.
Yeah, really. Now tell us a little bit of the history about that dog.
So they're considered an ancient breed. They're probably the oldest pointing breed on the planet. They're about 2,000 to 2,500 years of being around on the planet. Not many people know about them. Not many people hunt with them, but there's a small group in the States that have them, yeah.
Very mild-mannered dog, though. They'll get out. You did some training with her today, and I liked her speed, you know. And we saw them from, hey, almost slow today to, wow, my eyes couldn't keep up with them. Some of them zipped so fast, you know. But such a broad span of breeds there. But
you talk about their gait, Josh. They got a very particular gait that's kind of going.
Yeah, so they have this gait that's called the Brocco Trot. And through the field, it looks like they're kind of just floating. They're not going crazy fast, but nice and reserved, and it's regal, I guess, is what you would say.
Yeah, graceful.
Yeah, very graceful, and it's something that's to their breed, I mean, breed-specific, and it's one of the selling points. I loved it when I saw it for the first time. So, and then those big floppy ears, I mean, you can't beat it.
Well,
just love them.
I was telling Josh, you know, my wife is half Italian, I think, you know, and we've got three little lap dogs. I had to give up my labs when we moved and downsized a few years ago. And you guys are just killing me, I'm wanting to get one of all these breeds I saw today, you know. And the only one I might be able to sell to my wife is an Italian dog.
Well, that's what I got mine for. My wife was the one that actually agreed. She said, you know, I want a dog that's a little bit more laid back. So we came to an agreement, and we went and got her in Iowa from a great breeder, and I couldn't be happier with her.
Well, man, you guys are a good fit.
Yes.
Look good
yes,
out there are. Today.
Thank you.
You bet. Well, Josh is the youngest member of their group, and I was glad to see him show up there for a little bit. I thought it was going to be an old-timers convention out there in the field. And I like that, too, though. They move my speed, you know, a little bit slower. Well, you guys are involved, Cliff, in a lot of different activities. Mm-hmm. You're not just bird hunters going out there being selfish about it and, you know, just having a good time on your own. And that's okay, too, because a lot of people do that. It's a great stress reliever, and people pour so much time, energy, and money into dogs that they love. But you're doing this 24/7, it looks like.
Yeah, I train a lot.
Yeah. It takes a special person to be able to do that on an everyday basis. Run an operation like you got. Everything looks sparkling clean. Dogs seem happy. Nothing better than a happy dog, you know. Mm-hmm. Second only to a happy wife, you know. But just so impressed with the operation here. But you've got a youth coming up. Tell us about that.
For years, I moved to California 5 years ago. And I was president. I started an AVDA chapter out there. And something I did every year there for a period of years was a youth hunt. And so when I moved here, I wanted to bring that here too. And I was able to do that with a lot of help from a lot of volunteers. Pitts here has always helped out, and several other members here, NAVDA members that have joined the chapter that I started. And we just get together and we have a youth hunt. We supply NAVDA International, provides us with some funds to buy pheasants. And then I got some other sponsors that have helped out, and we're able to hold a youth hunt. And our goal is to get around 30 kids each time.
Wow.
And we'll provide the birds and the land and the dogs, and we're out there and let these kids harvest their birds. Every year I generally will have like rabbits that they will be able to process to, and we'll set up tables, and the kids get to harvest their own birds and process them at the end. And it's always been a great experience. They seem to really enjoy it, and we'll give the kids a little certificate at the end of it. This year we got a special guest, Lucas Outfitters, is going to join us. They will have archery targets set up. The kids will actually get
awesome.
Participate in practice and shooting the bows and learn how to do that with some professional instruction, along with shooting the birds and watching the dogs work.
So. Well, it sounds like an incredible program. I've been involved in a number of youth programs over the years. One of them, I ran a hunter apprentice school for the Missouri State Chapter of the National Wild Turkey Federation for 17 years. And I still hear from some of those kids.
Yep.
And that's been a while ago. But we had a three-day event. We'd start on a Friday evening, kind of put them through the hunter ed thing, you know, and some other specialized classes, let them get out, shoot their weapons, whatever it was, you know. At the time, and then the grand finale was an actual hunt. We hunted everything from rams on a game ranch, you know, to the bird hunts. And, of course, turkey hunts were our favorite. But they're a little difficult to pull off with kids, you know, because we'd like for them to have some success. And I sometimes think we spoiled them a little bit, you know. Yeah. This instant gratification thing can be taken a little too far sometimes. And I kind of point my fingers at TV shows sometimes, particularly turkey hunting shows. I must be a horrible turkey hunter because I never kill a turkey in the first 5 minutes of my hunt, but almost all the TV shows do.
Yeah.
I don't know how many days or weeks they spent trying to kill that one turkey, but, you know, youth programs, yeah, all about that. I worked for the Land Learning Foundation at one point. They had 20,000 acres up on the Missouri River. And, man, we did all kinds of hunting up there, deer, turkey, waterfowl, doves. And those people were very, very wealthy. Second spring I went up there, they built us 7 little log cabins to stay in. I mean, just an dream come true, except for the fact they had 20,000 acres and they built those cabins within 50 yards of a railroad track. And at night there was a train went through every 15 minutes. That was a little tough. But other than that, awesome program. But there's so many wonderful programs going on out there anymore, particularly for youth. But there was a study come out from one of the national organizations several years ago. It was almost disheartening. It was telling us to stop these youth programs, quit doing these youth programs because we have already lost them. It was telling us to put money into college-age kids because they're mobile, you know, they got money, they got friends, they got influence, blah, blah, blah. We'd have a better chance of maintaining the hunting tradition if we invested in those folks. Not happening in rural America. We're still training our kids.
Yeah.
And I am all for that. Because I know from the little bit of experience that I've had, the time, money, and effort you put into those kids, not all of them stayed in hunting, but you know what? They won't vote against hunting.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, so and I'd like to tell you guys, just like I've over the years been fortunate enough to help a number of young men and women who wanted to become guides or outfitters, and myself and 3 or 4 outdoor riders have been pretty instrumental in helping these people get started, just the media, you know, helping get their name out there, shoot a show with them, do a podcast with them, write articles about them to help them get started. But I've always told those people, I know you love what you're doing, but don't take it for granted. Don't underestimate yourself, because what you're doing and what you're teaching is very important to the future of hunting and the outdoor industry in the United States of America. So I applaud you guys for what you're doing, because, man, it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of effort. It's a lot of worries. It's a lot of passion. And when you're mixing people and guns and dogs and all those variables that come together, you pray a whole lot too.
Yeah, for sure. You sure do. Yeah. It's a sleepless night the night before.
Oh, yeah, we can all identify with that. But youth programs is not all you do.
No, we do an Army, veteran hunt too, and I'm going to let Pitts, as he's the one that actually brought the idea to me, and he's the one to really set this up. So I'm going to let Pitts speak on this first.
Well, about 4 years ago, this will be this November, the 7th and 8th, I think are the dates, we'll have our 4th annual warrior hunt. We call it the AUSA, which is our prime sponsor, AUSA warrior hunt. And it's for all people, whether they're active duty or veterans. If you were involved with the military, you're invited to attend.
Does that include second lieutenants?
That does. We make them shoot last. Oh. But.
Well, I made it to first lieutenant. So. Barely.
We're blessed. Cliff is a veteran. I'm a veteran. And we just, one day we were out doing, working dogs, I think, and I thought, man, Cliff, this would be a fantastic place to have a thing. So we just sat down and talked about it and decided, you know what, we're going to make it happen. And we did.
And that was how many years ago?
That was 4 years. End of October will be 4 years ago. So this will be our 4th annual. And during the process, James Breckenridge, who is the mayor of St. Robert now, he and I were friends, and we just happened to be talking one day, and he was like, you know, I think this is something that the AUSA would be interested in. And they came on board, and they've been our prime our main sponsor. They sponsor all the birds for the events, and we normally have between 40 and 60 veterans come out for the hunt. This year we're going to be limited because of the cost of birds. It's constantly going up every year.
Sure.
And so this year we're going to be limited at 40, and it'll be a first come, first serve. We'll start sign up somewhere around the end of September, beginning of October.
And sound like a fabulous, fabulous program, though. And
I want to say something about that veterans hunt. What's has been really cool is from his veterans hunt, we've got several of these guys are signing up kids for their youth hunts. They're actually veterans,
and also double duty there.
Yeah. Yeah. And from the veterans and the youth hunts, I've actually got parents that have now got bird dogs and are coming out here and training.
That is awesome. Now that's gotta be a great deal of satisfaction when you see the results come around like that. Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's such an impact on a person's life, and we know there's all kinds of programs out there anymore. Lots of, particularly all the single species conservation and organizations like the Turkey Federation, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants, Quail Unlimited, on and on. We've all got youth programs anymore. But you know what? Ed, I used to argue with the State Turkey Board about this. You know who the best teacher is for kids in the outdoors? If dad's around, dad, moms, uncles, cousins. I mean, Bill Cooper, any one of you guys can teach kids, but how much time are you going to get to spend with them? Yep. It may be a one-time thing. What kind of impact that have? I used to argue with State Turkey Board because they won't have a Jake's event, we call it. We won't have 500 kids there. We're going to let them shoot a BB gun and shoot a bow and blah, 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 blah. You know how many they retained? Retention was extremely low because they've got to have that repetition. Mm-hmm. And if Cousin Joe's taking them rabbit hunting, you know, every Saturday morning he can, that really makes an impact. It's just like, what's the best advertising for any business?
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth, absolutely. We can do all this fancy advertising. Mm-hmm. But it's that personal contact. It's that personal influence because a kid figures out pretty quick. If you're spending your Saturday mornings or an afternoon with him, he knows you've invested in him. You know, he may not think of it in just exactly those terms, but he's, he likes me, you know. And that's important to all of us. Absolutely. But that's not to, you know, pour any water on any of these programs because they're very much needed. They're very important in your teaching skills that they're going to use for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. That's to put some darn good food on the table. And all of us like to eat, you know. So,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, golly, it's hard to wrap a program up like this, you know, as much as we know about it, the outdoors, as much as we love it. We could talk forever, but nobody wants to listen to us forever. But you've got sponsors for this event.
Yeah, I'd like to recognize our sponsors. We couldn't do these things and hold these future events without them, and they're very appreciated. So our first sponsor is NAVDA, stands for North American Versatile Hunting Dog Association. Like I said, I'm a NAVDA judge. NAVDA has its own breed club registry. Their whole mission is to promote conservation for the use of a well-trained hunting dog. These dogs should be able to find your bird and bring it to you if you knock it down and hit it, a wounded bird, and promote good breeding. NAVDA's got its own registry, and you can look at my test records or anybody's records in there, and you can see how these dogs have performed different tests and what kind of lines they come from, and it's pretty good system. AUSA has been wonderful. They started with us during these veterans hunts, and every year they've been a great sponsor. They actually have come out to our youth hunt before too, and they supplied a dome, a tent, and they did some stuff out there with an axe throwing and stuff for the kids, and they've been fabulous. Fallen Outdoors is a new sponsor, is joining us this year. They're going to provide shotgun shells for us for our youth hunt. My son, Daniel Fleming, financial advisor, he's got a successful financial planning business, and he sponsored us every year. He enjoys doing this and sponsoring this, and I really appreciate it. Appliance RX, which is Pitts' son here.
It's Brandon.
Yeah,
Brandon.
Brandon has sponsored us. And then we got a new sponsor this year is Three Springs RV. He's also got the RV repair near me business. His name is Jared. What's Jared's last name? Drawing a blank.
Hayes.
Jared Hayes. Jared's just a wonderful young man. It's good to see these young men like Jared, and we got Josh here. Mm-hmm. They're into the bird hunting and doing this kind of thing and starting new families. And I really like to see new guys, not just as old guys out here. Yeah. And then Stallman Power Sports in Town has also sponsored us. They provided RVs last year and then some funds for us too. Lucas Outfitters, Cody Lucas will be here. He's bringing out 3D targets and stuff for our youth hunt, and the kids will be getting instruction on target shooting with bows and stuff too, which I which is really cool.
Awesome.
And we want to mention that DNR supports us every year.
Oh yeah, that's a main one. Conservation, local conservation department here has been fabulous. They provide all the chairs, the shotguns. They provide the disabled the vehicles for disabled veterans that we have, and they've been they're here all the time in my place. They a couple of these guys got pups for me, and I see them quite often, and they've been wonderful, and I can't say enough about the conservation department here in Missouri. I come from California, where it seems like they're kind of against you, but these guys have been wonderful. They really seem to support the hunter and the hunting community, so I really enjoy working with them.
Absolutely. Sound like you guys, hey, you put the time in, you're seeing the results, you're getting some good support. But Cliff, is somebody hears this podcast and they want to become a sponsor, how do they go about it?
They can contact me. I can leave my phone number, Bill. Is that okay? My phone number
sure.
is 951-526-9311. My farm here, it's this Fleming Farm and Kennel. I don't do a lot of advertising. Mainly, most of my clients are just word of mouth, and I don't push this real hard.
So, I don't think you have to.
So, but that's what I do. My hobby and passion is training bird dogs, and of course, I like to fish and stuff too. But I bird dogs are my thing.
And if you want a local number, they can call me as well. Yeah. And it's Pitts at 573-201-8455. And that's the main number to reach if you are a veteran or an active duty member wanting to participate in the warrior hunt coming up in November.
Awesome, awesome event. I'd applaud, but one applause, you know, kind of fades pretty quick. But, gosh, I can tell that you guys are excited about what you're doing. Man, again, Pitts, I really appreciate the invite. You know, your word of mouth stuff, I'm clear with Cuba, and I just hadn't heard about it, and I'm shocked that I hadn't, but I'm glad that you brought me over and introduced me and go, man, I feel like I've been in seventh heaven today watching all these awesome dogs. And it's just an incredible, incredible experience, and I wish you guys well. You're already successful. You know, what comes after success? More success.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, folks, I hope you have enjoyed the programming from Cliff Fleming, Pitts Lassane.
You got it right.
Oh, he's got a weird name. I think. Yeah. Spelled something terrible. You know. And Josh Hagar, myself, Bill Cooper, we're living our outdoor dreams. We encourage you to get into the outdoors and live your dreams as well.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you. You could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online, or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.